We live in a fantasy world now. Reality has been destroyed.
This is the time that we really need to pay attention.
The probabilities are overwhelmingly on gold's side.
That is the best environment to see gold increase its value.
Welcome to Palisades Gold Radio. I'm your host, Tom Bodrovics. Joining me today is Chris Marcus from Arcadia Economics. He's also the author of The Big Silver Short. How are you today, Chris?
Never been better, Tom. Appreciate all the stuff you've shared on your channel over the years. A lot of interviews that I've watched has helped my own research, and pleasure to be talking with you today. And I don't know if people can see, there is the Lincoln Memorial behind me, and there is the Washington Monument on the other side. So I'm in Washington. I went to the CFTC yesterday and found some unusual things, but we can dig in.
So why don't we start a little bit by telling us a little bit about your background, Chris. I know you've spent some times in rating agencies and some time at Merrill Lynch as well. So give us an idea of how you got here, please.
I was young. I needed the money. I don't know. I thought the purpose of life was, at least as told to me in my early years, get a job, get good grades, go to college, get a job, blah, 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 and all these other American indoctrinations. Ended up at Moody's in 2001. 2 months after joining in July, they were in the front of the news for Enron's debacle. Yeah, it's funny to hear they were friends with the Bush family. Actually, I don't hear they were friends. The older Bush talks about it. Month after that, I was running from the dust cloud in September 11. Finally, after 2 years at Moody's rating asset-backed commercial paper programs, I still never understood why they were creating shell entities. If you have a pool of assets here, why are you creating some shell entity there? Finally did get it in 2008. Made a little more sense then. After Moody's, went to Wharton's Business School, where I learned Keynesian economics at an expensive rate. Summer at Merrill Lynch's Chop Shop trading desk. Then I left. They didn't give me an offer there. It's kind of interesting in hindsight. Maybe I didn't fit in. I don't know. Maybe I'm an idiot or something, like Wall Street thinks about most normal, honest people. Joined Susquehanna International Group, was trading equity options, first on the floor of the American Stock Exchange, and then before we moved over to the New York Stock Exchange, and I might add, was not. Feel very grateful for the training I got there. It was not a bank. We went into a crowd. It was you buy or sell, you make or lose money. So there's no bailout or stimulus dollars funding any of that. Had my eyes open during the housing bubble. I was thinking, gee, I should be the guy who was trained to see this. Thought that was odd. Got me into gold and silver. Thought I was home free in 2011 when I had enough insight. I mean, now, Tom, I thought I was trained well. Clearly, I'm not on Paul Pelosi's option trading level. I mean, that guy is a legend. Maybe he has Jeff Curry from Goldman Sachs as his broker, but it's ironic. In 2010, right around when Ben Bernanke was writing his op-ed to sell QE2, very fraudulent paper printing program with a silly name, I remember seeing it was in our morning trader notes. Goldman Sachs was saying, hey, it's coming, and I've already been studying silver gold for about 2 years since then. I bought a 1,000-ounce silver block, and between late 2010, early 2011, started buying call options on GLD or SLV. I was a little naive to the game. I didn't know that the entire thing was completely rigged. Or Tom, I don't know what you call when it's miles and exponents beyond completely rigged, but so there were a couple times in 2011, especially you had the debt ceiling debacle. You had something called a Tea Party. U.S. got downgraded by S&P, while Moody's still leaves their AAA rating on there, saying simply not possible to have better credit profile than the U.S. government. So hopefully one of these congressional committees will ask them about that. Nonetheless, I don't know. I thought I had a good bet on. Silver's going up to $50. Money printing's going nuts. It seemed like there's any plan, and then just, the night drops like a rock after. It's funny, I remember that Sunday night, you see that news story about the SEALs, they got Osama bin Laden. I might add, was longtime business partners with the Bush family. I've heard on the internet, those conspiracy channels, probably some of your keyboard thumping guests, Tom, talk about how even the morning of September 11th, so, you know, like a little bit before I was running from the dust cloud, that elder George Bush, who actually was a president, former CIA director right around the MK Ultra time, he was meeting with the Bin Laden family right before I was running from the dust cloud, and his nitwit son was reading My Pet Goat to a bunch of second graders. Didn't seem fazed in the least that trade centers had been taken down. And so I don't know, there's a lot of weird stuff that made me think, gee, maybe silver would be rising in value if people are printing money, and or at least gold, since I know gold used to be what the currency was backed by, right? So actually, Tom, can we take a little history detour on this one? I think it'll put things in perspective.
Absolutely. I'd like to dig a little bit more into how silver dropped in that day. I know Craig Hemke mentioned that in the article that he just wrote. And I want to dig into the reason that you're in Washington as well. That's why we're doing this. You know, you're doing this podcast outside in front of the Lincoln Memorial. And the also looking straight out right there at the Washington Monument. So, what's the history lesson that you'd like to talk about?
Well, and we'll get back to your question. Maybe Paul Pelosi will roll by and explain, because I haven't been able to figure out why the price. Actually, CFTC, probably maybe they tamped it down. Seems the best I can figure out is that a lot of these felony banks rigged the price. That's a short answer. But if we take a step back, since we are here in Washington, you know, we had this thing called a dollar that was backed by gold. Seems simple enough. Actually, it works pretty good, a lot better than the current fraud bucks we have here. Then the Fed had to be invented in secret. I don't know why that would be, if it's really for the good of the country. But I might add, the Fed made up by the same banks that melt down the economy time and time again. So they pop out of left field in 1913. And a couple of years later, for the good of the country, after the Fed had inflated a credit bubble that led to the Great Depression, you hear another so-called president say, for the good of the country, people have to give their gold up. I don't know. I haven't been able to. That still seems bizarre to me. Like, this doorstopper rock that even the legend Warren Buffett can't figure out its use. Why would that matter, Tom? Have any of your, none of me or my guests, any of the one I've had on my show can figure it out. Do you know the answer to that? Or is there someone in Washington I can ask who can explain that? I can't find them.
Yeah, it's, I'm sure there's a lot more people smarter, or there's many people a lot smarter than me that maybe don't have the answer to that either, Chris.
I was watching this video. I mean, I thought it was, they turned it into the Treasury. I don't know if this is accurate. I heard that they actually had to sell it to the Fed. Given that the Fed is supposedly warehousing some of the nation's gold, it seems at least plausible. Again, Janet Yellen's in the Treasury, so what's the difference at the end of the day anyway? You know, that's interesting. So the Fed pops out of left field. A couple of years later, for the good of the country, they got to take your favorite doorstopper, sell it to the Fed at $21, and then a couple of years later, they mark it at $35. This is somehow saving the country, yet we're getting into World War I, World War II, and a lot of this stuff. And then fast forward, Bretton Woods, Ben Bernanke. How come Ben Bernanke doesn't understand gold? Did he not watch what Richard Nixon said following the collapse of the London gold pool? Maybe he should subscribe to your channel, Tom. You guys explain it pretty darn clearly. But he sits there, he doesn't know. Alan Greenspan, who once understood gold, but then when he got into power, he forgot about it. Now he has the balls to criticize Bernanke and the other guys, what a traitor he is. But I'm here in Washington. I can't figure it out. My Wharton MBA education is not sufficient enough for this brain buster. I've also been asking around, seeing if anyone can help me explain. Maybe I'm a clown, but I call myself a silver analyst, and I'm, you know, people watch my show, they're saying, how did silver fall 10% when, aside from the Friday of January 29th, on February 2nd, they tripled the previous record in the history of the silver trust of metal added at 61 million ounces.
That's the SLV, correct?
Uh-huh. Now, here's what's funny. I called them Friday the 5th asking how that could happen. They didn't have answers then. They didn't mention anything about the prospectus changes that had happened 2 days later, even though I was on the phone for 40 minutes asking for audits and anything like that. And mentioned, it's unlike government. I don't like lie and sneak behind people's backs. I said, frankly, man, I'll be completely honest with you. I have a show. These are my questions. I can't figure them out. Can you help me? They didn't say anything about the changes in the prospectus. I asked who said, I talked to David Morgan, a bunch of other conspiracy theorists, keyboard thumpers. How did you add 61 million ounces while the price fell 10%? They didn't say anything about the short squeezes that Jeffrey of Goldman Sachs lied about on TV. You go see for yourself. You don't have to take my word for it. They didn't mention anything about that. I can't figure it out. I came to Washington. I've been emailing the CFTC. I sent them multiple rounds of evidence that they've been sitting on. When I ask them if they've looked at it, they get pretty defensive. Finally, someone called back my partner and said, hey, here's the guy to contact. I asked him if he's looked at it. And I was able to figure out the first round February 12th after Silver Tuesday on February 2nd, which, Tom, when you think about it, and this is a pretty bold claim, but given all the evidence around that, plus now that the LBMA reveals that they were running out of metal, said within weeks, they said they were scared shitless. Maybe you shouldn't have written a report to tell people that.
The concerns were still very real. This reflects both the time required for a refinery to convert non-good delivery material into 1,000-ounce bars approved by the LBMA as good delivery, and then the delivery of this by sea freight into London. Another way to view this is to look at the combined COMEX LBMA holdings, which at end of February were 1.518 million ounces. ETPs vaulted in these locations stood at 880 million ounces, which meant that 42% or 638 million ounces was in theory immediately available to meet new silver ETP demand. However, it is not that straightforward. This does not take into account any challenges in moving the metal between London vaults, nor any hurdles in being able to ramp up ETP allocations on COMEX versus London. It does suggest that the pool of available metal should be sufficient for the foreseeable future, at least to meet new ETP demand. This also presupposes there is no repeat of the social media frenzy. Unfortunately, they covered the next sentence. Should this occur, higher prices would almost certainly be triggered, which would be met by heavy selling. LBMA says that this also presupposes no repeat of social media frenzy. So if all the keyboard thumpers have another party, then higher prices are coming.
But I can't figure out how that happens. I can't figure out why the CFTC has not commented when they said they have a silver investigation. I also can't figure out what Ross Benham, the acting chairman of the CFTC, just popped in that position a couple of January 21st, so 10 days before this happened. And maybe he's confused because one of their lawyers left a few days earlier. Another guy, Keith Tarbert. I don't know, where'd he go? His buddy Giancarlo talks about popping the Bitcoin bubble. First bubble since 2008. I guess he didn't see Trump's big, fat, ugly bubble campaign speech. None of these guys, I've sent them the evidence. I asked, have you looked at it? I figured this out that day. Watch my channel. Everybody else figured it out at that time. But actually, there is some update from the CFTC because despite them just telling me to go piss off, the lawyer himself, Rostin Benham, acting chairman of the CFTC, someone who should know that there's a time where you say, I can't talk, I'm an open investigation, but you can go Google this. Put his name in, Rostin, last name Benham, Behnam, go by most recent upload. See a half-hour clip where some Boca Raton Commodity Futures Conference And it had 78 views, I think, before I watched it. I watched like 10 times that day. I was so shocked by what the man said on camera. And now it's got a couple hundred after I mentioned it to my audience. But he actually said there, where no one was listening, he said, you know, it's a really close call on February, beginning of February, when those keyboard thumpers and those retail guys that they're investigating were... he said things almost got out of control and they had to tamp it down.
The resiliency and the market structure of the futures market really were able to tamp down what could have been a much worse situation in the silver market.
Tom, if their mission statement says to protect fair and honest markets, people are buying silver and the price goes up, what do you need to tamp down?
Yeah, it's very interesting that, you know, their mission statement says that they as it's stated, it says the mission statement of the Commodity Futures Trading Commission is to promote the integrity, resilience, and vibrancy of the U.S. derivatives markets through sound regulation. So it exactly as you're saying, Chris, it doesn't make much sense when they're trying to tamp down demand from the retail crowd, as you say.
Should we ask Honest Abe? Maybe he's got some answers. I've been calling the CFTC. They don't. See, you know what? It reminds me of what Harry Markopoulos described in his book. You know, maybe some of your listeners, SEC didn't talk about this, but he's the guy who was writing the evidence about Bernie Madoff for years. It was almost a decade before that scheme unfolded. Talking about who Bernie's sole banker was? Stead one. I think you can get it.
So, Chris,
JP Morgan.
Yes, Chris, sir. can you tell us more about the report that the LBMA recently released? They've never done one like this, correct?
I don't know if anybody's ever released a report this special since the Warren Commission, but yeah, that was a rather intriguing report. Again, hey, at least I don't claim to be the brightest bulb in the shed or wherever they stole bright bulbs. They're point proven. And I went to public school and Wharton's business school. So, you know, I'm trying to undo that and learn. But so I don't get the LBMA report because they said all this social media frenzy at the end of January that they said 120 million ounces went into the silver trust. Say how much went in was purchased through the bullion dealers, although I covered that play on my show. I know you had a lot of them on your show, and it seemed like a lot, right? So this is the LBMA's words. I promise I'm not making this up. Tom, can you put the link to the report in the description, please? So like people aren't saying, oh, this guy's like just a smart ass, he's making this up. I don't know, maybe I can't read because of my education, but it's your. I looked at the paper, and if I have the ability to read English words, it seemed like they said they were very concerned of running out of metal. They mentioned it several times in their report. They actually said if this had continued at that pace, they would have run out of metal within weeks. That's how scared they were. Because of those keyboard thumpers and their Reddits and social media, this and that. But here's where I'm a little confused, Tom. The report actually says, could that happen again? And they just said it's unlikely because, you know, COVID. You wouldn't believe the things that COVID is doing these days, you know. U.S. Mint, which at least when I went to the Denver Mint, the only part where there's actually people's on the tour, but COVID's shutting it down. COVID's shutting this down. COVID's shutting that down. Maybe it's by design. Who knows? But they said it's unlikely that would happen again because, you know, you really need the perfect storm and how it was COVID caused this and that. I would suggest if the LBMA wants to hire me as a consultant to explain why people buy silver, I don't know, maybe I'm bullshit. Maybe I'm no credentials, just some guy mouthing off. But I don't think that's they were buying silver that weekend because of COVID. So when they said, is it unlikely that it could happen? It's unlikely it could happen again. I guess they're saying I don't think there's no interest. Those keyboard thumpers might not organize or coordinate or say, wow, this guy. Because, Tom, like, if you say, like, you tell people they're idiots, they do something, and then you tell them it worked. we're shitting in our pants. And then you say, well, I don't think it could ever happen again. I guess we'll see if it does. I don't know. The report didn't mention what happens if it does happen again. Although they mentioned back then there were 360 million ounces of silver left in London. Tom, I'm going to send these guys a Christmas card. I've spent the last decade, I've talked to Keith Neumeyer, Santa Claus, David Morgan, everyone in between saying, how much metal is left? Unfortunately, these guys just answered. I've never been able to get that answer before. And it's interesting. That means if every American bought 1 ounce of silver, LBMA's tapped out. I guess they better hope those keyboard thumpers don't ever say anything again. So, Tom, I don't know if you should publish this interview if you want the LBMA as a sponsor or anything. I don't know. I've never seen you take money from dirty people like Dick Hayes or Jeff Curry or Goldman Sachs. So I think you're going to be fine. If you publish it, you know, YouTube doesn't like free speech. I believe there's government funding in YouTube. So it's the type of thing they like to censor. But I've received a lot of support the last couple of days, certainly from you and a lot of others, and government for some reason responds. I would think they would want the evidence. We're in the United States of America, right?
And that's like, the exact reason that you're in Washington, right? Is to try and bring more attention and to have somebody, you know, try and respond to your all of the evidence that you brought forth to the CFTC. Isn't that correct?
That's why I came. I actually have plenty of other things to do, but came here. I didn't do anything violent. Didn't go on someone's property. Didn't trespass. Didn't shoot anyone. Didn't steal people's money through taxes. Didn't do anything outside the legal code. I just thought it would be the honorable thing to do. Walked away from Wall Street. I didn't have a legal firm signed up to maybe large sums of money like we see with the CFTC lawyers. They didn't have any of that place, but I thought she reminded me of the days when I was still, before I joined Wall Street. I remember thinking, what if one day on a trading desk or something, and it was like the movies where you see there saying, hey, you got to do something illegal. You got to be in the crime or else we're gonna fire you, throw you out. Stuff like that. So I'm glad at least that once I realized what was going on, I left. Spoke up about it. I don't know. I would think that's what we're encouraging our children to do. It seems like what I thought that was the responsible and honorable thing to do. It's what I hear our politicians talk about during a campaign promise. So I didn't hurt anybody, tax anybody. And next time I hear any politician tell anybody else what to do or how much they care about the fraud, have them call me and let me know where I can submit the evidence. So far, let's see, the list of people, I talked to a couple Secret Service agencies, they don't care, or agents rather. I saw them on the street, they're sitting there, you know, watching YouTube on their phone. Called CFTC, went to CFTC. Is anywhere in Congress, Barney Frank around? I'll stop there too. CME, COMEX. Just told I'm supposed to contact the FBI. I know Avi Perry. He's the one on his name with Department of Justice. Oh yeah, I called the Department of Justice. I told this to them too. And it's like, you guys find these guys $1 billion last year. I'm calling them a fraud in public. That's JP Morgan. You want the evidence? They don't even ask for it. Like, hey, you don't have to research. I did it for you. You want me to send you the evidence? So far, nobody has asked for it. CFTC has it. But when I contacted Gates Huron, someone called my partner back, said, contact Gates, asked, have you done anything with the evidence? Oh, we can't say anything. Okay. I'm going to talk to them. I'll put my name on a Bible or anything else and say that February 2nd, at least from what I've seen in my Wall Street career, Silver Tuesday, the single greatest felony in the history of silver. And I think if people hadn't been so indoctrinated with the lies that their government tells them, they would understand why I think it's the single biggest felony in the history of finance with all that's riding, because all this ends when they can't print money. All comes to an end. can be harder for Paul Pelosi in his option trade when the silver price is exposed. I don't know. Maybe that's why they're trying to keep it temp down. But if any of your viewers or you or anyone knows, I'm here in Washington until Thursday. If anyone can tell me where to go, I'm admittedly confused.
So, Chris, there's another day, again, when Craig Kempke wrote this article in support of you and talking about your mission there. He mentions the date of May 1st, 2011, it was also a very significant day. So can you go through that for us as well, please?
Well, yeah, what happened that day, Tom?
Price of silver dropped a little bit, didn't it?
That was the day after... That was the day when the Obama administration was bragging about assassinating some guy in Afghanistan that I heard was dead years earlier anyway. Or do you mean how the price of silver dropped off a cliff? It's $49.50, and on the open it dropped $6, got pummeled ever since then. Money printing's continued higher, wrote a book about it. I don't know, they hammered the shit out of the bits. See, Tom, here's the difference between silver and equities. I understand the CFTC doesn't know this. They didn't have to go onto a trading floor and figure out how to buy and sell honestly and make a profit. It's not easy. Most of the banks don't know how to do it either. See, when they lose money, they just have the printing press. I didn't have it, so I had to figure it out. So I understand their lawyers. They don't understand markets, how they work, but I'll explain it. So Rosty, if you're listening, here's how it goes. See, if you want to short a stock, you have to locate a borrower, or at least you used to. Maybe they don't even care about that anymore. So I'm sure Goldman doesn't have to locate a borrower. But in silver, you don't have to do that. So it was like the borrower means if you want to short a share of a stock, sell something you don't own, you have to borrow it from someone. So theoretically, if there's 100 shares, you can't short 50,000 and drive the price manipulatively to zero. By the way, when I interviewed Bart Chilton, former commissioner of the CFTC, he explained why the agency allegedly looks for large concentrated positions and the damage that can do when they're used manipulatively. Rosten, you should review that before you make your next comment. So the thing is, though, is that in silver, where you don't have any check and balance in place like that, the banks can and routinely do just, I mean, it doesn't matter. You could have Ben Bernanke come back in his helicopter dropping silver bars. Price starts to skyrocket. However many bids there are, sold. That's just like whack-a-mole. Bid for silver pops up, sold. You have the Fed's balance sheet. Then you have the Exchange Stabilization Fund popping their dirty heads in there. And you just hammer the shit out of all the bids, and that's how the price of silver drops. But fortunately, you don't have to take my word for it. It's a video I made, How the Silver Market is Rigged, or something like that, where we went through some of the Deutsche Bank transcripts. These geniuses on public electronic chat, which was monitored, they explain the, Tom, I believe it was called the slice and blade technique. They talk to their friends at the other banks, which I think would make it interbank collusion times to smash it. And fortunately, since I know the CFTC doesn't have time to look at this, despite their $304 million request for their budget a year or two ago. So I mapped it out for them. See, I was doing this. I didn't even know if I could pay my rent a year ago because I've been... I figured it out. Don't worry, I'm good now. But, you know, this is the stuff even, you know, I stopped. You wouldn't believe how many emails. Like, I had to send the emails that come in through our site in the beginning of February. Like, I couldn't even respond to the ones that were coming directly to my address. I had to have somebody else handle those. But I stopped for 10 hours one day in the middle of it on February 12th to write the evidence down for the CFTC. Interviewed 15 of the smartest people I could find in a book called The Big Silver Short, which dug into what happened in almost the 10-year anniversary, Tom. How cool is that? So exciting, especially when the LVMA told us their vulnerability, which I'm sure nobody would ever exploit. I mean, you don't even have to break the law to just tell people, hey, these idiots, they just told you that if you buy a lot of silver, they're fucked. So to finish the answer there, Tom, the way it works is that if you just hammer the bids and there's no cap on that, you can drive a price lower. I might add, again, I don't have government credentials, but at Susquehanna, they made it pretty clear. If I had ever executed an order like that, probably would have been fired before the lunchtime. You don't do it. Because if you're trying to sell and get the highest price, you actually are legitimately selling what the CFTC's mission statement claims, then we have this thing called a VWAP, volume weighted average pricing. So if it's like it's trading options. So if I buy a call option and I'm hedging it with stock, but the stock's really thin, you know, it would send out 100 shares here, you know, 2 minutes later, 100 shares. So you're not pushing it down. We're trained specifically not to do that. Again, if Paul or Nancy Pelosi want to provide a safe environment where we can compare option knowledge and discuss any of these details of why the silver price, despite JP Morgan, can find $920 million. 311 of that is the restitution. I would say if anyone has a COMEX futures got clobbered in that, CFTC doesn't tell you that money's sitting there. Now, if you didn't trade COMEX, that you're out of luck. I'll tell you what, if the CFTC wants to bet some silver against me, let me know when you're ready.
So, Chris, to kind of wrap up here, you were mentioning that it's the 10-year anniversary from May 1st, 2011. As Craig pointed out in his article, what was basically his call to action for people?
I think Craig thinks, I think he was raising the LVMA. I like thinking of things in poker. Because the LVMA said, hey, you stupid fucking idiots. You were kicking our ass. And we had to get the CFTC and the banks to all do a coordinated felony to hold it in check a little bit longer. So it seems like Craig is saying, what if I tell a couple people and they tell a couple people just how, like, Craig doesn't have to make anything up because you can just put the video of Rustin Benham talking about how he tamped down the price along with the LVMA telling you how fraudulently exposed they were. And I don't know. I mean, I want to be careful of the words I choose because I know collusion in a financial market is a very serious crime, as I've been told. But I believe Craig is he works for Sprott Money. So I think that's just marketing telling people, hey, if you want to buy the product and you advertise it honestly. Tom, just between you and me, I don't know. Maybe I'll just go next 10 days. I don't know. Maybe I'll just go learn how to play golf or something. I probably won't think about silver. Full disclosure, unlike anyone I've found here in Washington so far, I will be transparent. By the way, transparent, Rustin Benham, that's a word that you disgustingly misuse. You're not only transparent, not only the opposite of transparent, you're complicit in making sure these things were hidden. But I'll be transparent. Yes, I do receive a commission if I bring a client to Miles Franklin. You know, I also help them with their marketing. They paid me for that, so... It's kind of funny, Tom. I bought myself a YouTube ad, Steve, for a little present a couple months ago. Actually, shortly after February 1st. So, I don't know. We'll see. Maybe YouTube ads will pop up about the truth of silver. We'll put Dick Hayes' ugly face on there and show him lying. Rustin will show him. Anyone else wants to be in a commercial? But I'm probably bluffing, and I'm sure nobody else is going to buy silver or care. Nobody in the world is going to be interested. No one in Washington's interested. So I think Craig is saying that he has some friends who might care. And I guess exciting. It's 10 days away.
Sounds good, Chris. Is there anything else you want to leave our audience with before we wrap up?
I would just say that I really have a great appreciation for people like you, Tom, and other people who speak up. I know it's not always easy. There are people who have asked or, send prayers, hoping that I'm safe. And I have thought about it. Is it dangerous to speak the truth in the United States of America? Fortunately, I'm good. A lot of people who care about me, and I have a new personal defense system I picked up over the weekend. So I am fine, but I really appreciate people who, in the face of mafia-like corruption, deeply embedded throughout many agencies of this government, which are the reason why I'm getting ready to leave the country for the second time. But I've learned a lot from you and your guests and the people who actually would be great stewards of this country rather than what I've found here. And perhaps, I guess the last thing, maybe if I could just add, if anybody knows any government agency that has any interest in the evidence, like, let me know, I'll send it to them. but I can't find it so far.
Well, I really appreciate the work that you do too, Chris. I think, you know, all of this information needs to get out there. It needs to be disseminated. And, you know, I appreciate that you're there doing the work in Washington to try and bring this evidence to light. Of course, we can find you at Arcadia Economics on Twitter, on YouTube, and we'll post links to your show notes. And, you know, you recently did a video reading through that LBMA report, all of those things. We'll link to all that in the show notes. Chris, thanks so much for joining us from Washington.
Thank you, Tom, and thank you to everyone who's been watching today.
This podcast is for general informational purposes only. Nothing on this podcast should be taken as investment advice. Guests on this show are not compensated for their appearance. Listeners are urged to educate themselves and make their own decisions. Do not base any investment decisions on the information contained. To view our full disclaimer, please visit our website.